Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Buffalo Bills Maybe Next Year, the podcast that goes into detail to prepare an agenda minutes before it goes on air, and then forgets to prepare an intro for itself. So with that in mind, I am Paul.
I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
You know, what do you do, Frank? Because you're the king of the on-the-fly intro. Like, I was thinking, as I started speaking, like, ooh, I've got to ad-lib something. I'm like, do I really have to ad-lib something, though? Is it required that I do that?
I'm usually thinking about some joke or ridiculous bit of pop trivia or zeitgeist that has just happened, and I just do my best to work that into whatever the intro is. And so, but it does take at least a minute or two before you start speaking to have a chance at it working. So sorry about that.
No. That's all right. Scott, anything to add to my non-intro intro? Any observations, thoughts?
No.
All right. Henry, anything Henry's got to add to it?
Henry, that's Henry's thoughts about your intro so far.
All right.
Also, probably his thoughts about the preseason game.
Yes. What an appropriate segue. Henry's like, this is the lamest intro ever. I'm going to add to it. I'm going to make it special. All right, well, you hear Rex Ryan in the background on the preseason game, so there's Rex's opinion of it. So let's talk about this preseason game. We'll go into it in a minute on the it was just another preseason game, which we didn't necessarily think it would be. We thought this might be the dress rehearsals it tends to be. But I figured we would start with, let's go into the game and think about, okay, what stood out to you about this game? What impressed you? What made you like, what, or was it just kind of a basic thing to you in terms of there was nothing that either defied or really reinforced expectations? I think we'll start with Frank. I think that'll be the way to go. So, Frank, okay. any thoughts or opinions?
It was a terrible game, that was for sure. It was really hard to watch, largely because I did notice that the coverage here in Washington, they, you know, never to pass up a good opportunity to pump up expectations in the preseason. They were very happy with Kirk Cousins and his performance. I thought Kirk Cousins was kind of flat, particularly given the fact that the Bills didn't really start anybody from the defense. That seemed to be a key aspect to everything, was the Bills really just didn't play anybody at all. So I don't know that there was much to glean from this, other than apparently the Bills feel comfortable with their team as prepared and as constituted, because there was no need, none of even the pretense of, oh, well, we got to get guys on the same page and doing things. Like, nobody cares about that, apparently. It's all about health. So I was, I guess that's a good thing to take away for the Bills. I guess maybe that's even what I would say is the biggest takeaway, is that the Bills seem confident enough to throw away the one half of football in practice where they allegedly were supposed to try.
I think I'm trying to explain how I feel about this game without saying exactly what Frank said, but I can't, because it was a terrible game and there's not really much to say about it, because they're like, you know, again, yes, I mean, I couldn't listen. I mean, as people who, anyone who's ever listened to any Redskins preseason game, you cannot listen to the game because Joe Theismann is just terrible.
He's really bad. He's so bad.
He's so bad. Watching a feed, and they were doing the Redskins feed, and then they eventually gave up on the Redskins feed and went with the Bills feed.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's better to listen to the game on a 10-second delay than what's happening on the screen than listen to Joe Theismann. It's just that simple. So that makes it kind of hard to enjoy a preseason game, because you can't. It's obviously a lot harder to tell what's going on when you don't have the commentators, especially if one of them's Theismann, which you can really, it doesn't really help anyway. I think I was pretty pleased with Manuel's performance. I mean, he didn't have great numbers. He ended up at like 57 QBR or something like that, or 59.9 QB rating, 21 of 39 for 221, interception and 2 sacks. It's not like a great outing, but he did have a couple good scrambles, which was nice to see, 3 for 38. So that made me feel a little better. Jonathan Williams, I thought, looked nice. But I think I am troubled a bit by, I wonder how much Rex was kind of thinking about the fact he's already lost Lawson and Ragland. I mean, obviously Lawson he never really had, to be honest. And Ragland he did lose during training camp. And he's a little gun-shy because of that. and how much of it is like he just knows that maybe he just knows the defense is just going to be garbage this year, and if Watkins or Taylor gets hurt, we're going to be screwed. So he's just like, it's not even worth it. Like, let's just have him do it in camp and without any pads on. I wonder if that's his thought process.
The funny thing being on this is that what looked most impressive to me was actually the Bills' defense, the people they had in there, even when they had many second stringers early on, and then as they started to go to two-and-a-half stringers, I guess third stringers, not quite third stringers, you know, that's when they noticeably struggled against Cousins a bit. I think Rex is actually overconfident in his defense, thinking, yeah, you know, they look so good, we don't need any help, even though, as Scott noted, they're down Ragland, they're down Lawson, Shaq Lawson, maybe down Manny Lawson game one. I still don't think we know how that situation's taking out. And, of course, they're down Darius for the first four games, not to mention they lost Mario Williams, who, when he is on, is a very good football player. So, you know, all of those losses, and yet he feels like this defense that took a step, huge step back last year is going to take a step forward. Well, I'm interested in seeing how that works out for him. I am not optimistic, cautiously, nor otherwise. Offensively, again, similar to previous weeks, I would have liked to see them finish more drives. They had some moments. E.J. Manuel looked a lot like E.J. Manuel, I would say. He made one or two decisions where I'm like, eh, that was not really what you wanted to do there. He showed that athleticism that allows him to try and make things up on the fly, and occasionally had some pluses there. I will say the one thing I liked about the resting of the starters was the big potential injuries we were talking about are what, Chris Gregg and, you know, Jonathan Williams, depth players, you know, not guys who are LeSean McCoy or Charles Clay. So I understand the logic. You know, I see why Rex did what he did, trying to keep the team healthy. But, you know, come week one against Baltimore, they better be fit. They better be in shape. They better not have taking the pedal off the gas so much that they're not ready to come out and play. So that has me a bit concerned with the level of confidence there. One other thing, I think it's kind of good to kind of go round on this game and before we wrap up the pregame talk and go to three stars. I always like to say, I don't want to focus on the players that surprised us because I think a lot of that will be covered in three stars certainly, but was there any unit in particular, and I'll start this just because I want to see where I'm going with this, or I want you guys to see where I'm going with this. Mine is the offensive line surprised me. That first-string offensive line just got blown away by Washington off the ball around. Tyron gets hit twice from behind. He had one more series, and that was it for his night. There seemed to be pressure in the backfield all of the time, whether it was the first unit, the second unit. I was disappointed, particularly by the defense, the offensive line play. Again, they weren't in, the first string wasn't in for that many series. But that has me concerned because this is a big money unit, and the strength of the Bills is supposed to be run the ball, run the ball, run the ball, and then give Tyrod time to throw his bombs where he drops him in on a dime. Were there any other units, and I'll start with Scott on this one, you know, were there any units in particular that you looked at and saw and thought, eh, that unit is a unit really underperformed?
I think I was a little disappointed at the linebackers, specifically like the backup linebackers. I mean, obviously it was mostly the backups because I don't think Zach Brown, if he played, he didn't play that much. And obviously Ragland's out, so we're already kind of down to our number twos and threes to a certain extent anyway. But I was reading one of the wrap-ups, and someone thought Hampton had a good game. Hampton looked terrible. Like, Hampton didn't even look like an NFL player as far as I was concerned. So Hawthorne. I can't even say his name right. Hawthorne looked terrible. I thought he was pretty bad. Spikes looked okay. He had, like, one decent tackle. But literally, I don't think, and Lorenzo Alexander had a pretty good game, but I'm going to go ahead and just, I mean, I'm not going to think that somehow he is like the best linebacker ever. And he's never played, like, he's been a special teamer his entire career. I can't imagine that the light just went on like 5 years into his career. Now, it's entirely possible that it did, and he's going to be like come out like a house of fire this year, and he never got a shot at any of his other teams. But that just seems a little odd to me that in his 10th year, he'd suddenly turn into like the second coming of Bruce Smith. So, so the linebackers were a little disappointing to me, and I think there was a lot of, you know, Washington didn't Do they even have Alfred Morris? I don't even know if he's still on the team.
No, he is.
Okay, regardless. Robert Kelly, scratch it up as another guy I've never heard of who suddenly is doing, you know, 4.3 a carry on 12 carries against us in the preseason. Again, I don't want to get overexcited about it either. Obviously, the defensive line not being at full strength is going to affect the linebackers too, but still, a little disappointed there.
I would say the linebackers too, and kind of all for the same reasons that Scott said. It just wasn't a very deep game. So, I mean, there wasn't a lot of stuff to really read into, but the piss poor tackling largely came from that part. Like some of the one touchdown pass, the one guy, I think it was Morris, the guy's name was Morris, who was supposed to be tackling the wide receiver, just like didn't cut off anything. He just was totally in the wrong place, and the guy ran around him and went to the touchdown. And so like these are people that may or may not even be on the team in a few days. So yeah, I don't want to get too.
It might have been Sterling Moore. That might
Sterling Moore. Yeah.
That's right, because I referred to him at one point in the live tweeting as not so Sterling Moore, who was clearly not in a mood to tackle. Just he's like, you know what, it's not a tackling.
Yeah.
Why hurt yourself? Yeah.
Alfred Morris now plays for the Dallas Cowboys. Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay.
So there you go. Neither did I.
So, you know, you know what, I was going to cut in with some final observations on the game. Why don't we get Scott's opinion, though, on what he's thinking of as the real three stars of this matchup.
So I'm going to give your first honorable mention to Brandon Dederick, mostly because his last name is Dederick, and it reminds me a lot of Dredrick Tatum, who everyone remembers, who Homer fought.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was probably season 3 or 4 of The Simpsons, right as it was entering the apex of the Simpsons.
It's only continued for a mere 22 or so years since.
Well, I don't know if I'd call the last 22 years one big apex. That would be a very.
I wasn't getting the apex. Just like it's amazing the show hit the apex when it did. And yet here it is, still on the air.
Oh, yeah. No,
you know, though, like, I watch it, all the repeats now that I have FXX, and I maintain there are really almost no bad episodes of The Simpsons. Like, even, like, these later seasons, once you...
Oh, sure.
Like, I'd feel bad if I, like, made them appointment television, but, like, you could just put it on anytime. It's like the Beatles. Like, really, you can put any Beatles song on, pretty much, and everyone will be pretty much happy.
And it's kind of hard to see. Yeah. I think that's probably in the best. But anyway... Brandon Dederick, in addition to having an awesome name, and boy, it wouldn't be awesome if he made the team and you could come up with a cool nickname for him. He had 4 tackles and 2 tackles for loss. So not a terrible game anyway, name regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So he's on the list of someone who gets the honorable mention. And then your third star, I had it on here as Jonathan Williams, who had basically one 37-yard run, which kind of made his night. I mean, it was a really sweet 37-yard run. Like he broke 2 tackles and made another guy miss, made the other safety miss, and scored a touchdown. His other 10 carries went for 5 yards. So we're gonna have to work on that, Jonathan. And again, I'm really not convinced this Carlos Williams thing is gonna play out well for anybody. And that's something we can maybe talk about later too, if we run short on time. So he gets your third star. Your second star goes to the Washington running back Robert Kelly, 12 carries for 51 yards. He actually looked pretty fearsome on most of his carries. He looked like he had a good steam and didn't look like he was doing too many terrible things, at least as far as I could remember. So he gets a second star. And first star definitely does not go to Kirk Cousins, because, again, like as Frank pointed out, he was like 3 of 11 in the first quarter against even...
He threw it right into like some stone-handed Bills D-back.
Yeah, Corey White, who's not going to...
Corey White, right. If it was anybody who was going to make a football team, it would have been an interception for a touchdown.
Yeah, exactly. So the first star instead goes to, who is the guy, Preston Smith, who had two tackles, one of which was for loss, but he actually had a lot of pressures too. He had good hits on the quarterback, and he was definitely in the backfield on one or two good plays. I watched this game somewhat live, but also not really, so it wasn't, and as everyone has said, it was a terrible game. And I even watched like the second half today, and I was still like, this is a terrible game. I don't want
to
watch this.
I stayed up till the whole thing. It was 3.5 hours long. No excuses.
There's a guy on Washington whose name is Valdez Showers. That's like one of those made-up Madden names where it's like they took two names and put them together, but no one would actually name their son Valdez Showers. That's not a thing. I'm going to rule that out.
I've never heard of that.
Also, Nick O'Leary is terrible, by the way. Can we just say that?
He's
talking about cuts coming up. Tyler's not going to be on the team.
Is Jordan Gate? Well, never mind. I'll let Paul get us started on the cut story before I start asking if Dax will be cut or not. So
speaking of which, the Bills have signed a player, a quarterback, today. The guy named Austin Trainer. Kind of odd to me. I guess that's their way of saying like we don't want EJ playing the whole game again, and we're not sure Cardell will be ready. So
I think
that's all it is someone to play in the game, so they don't have to waste EJ. They don't have to use EJ the whole time. So, otherwise, I think, just wrapping up this game, there was – the officiating was definitely really off. It's funny. I even noted, like, Lorenzo Alexander committed about 3 personal fouls that were not called, and then he hits the quarterback in the waist and gets called for a personal foul. So I explain that one to me. I don't know. I worry about the linebackers just like you guys do. Our listeners were in the same boat. It was an awful game. It's a really tough game to analyze. That's why we only spent 15 minutes on it. Normally we go on for about a year with these games. But all in all, just one of those where it's like, meh, it's disappointing because we thought it was a dress rehearsal. I actually left work at a reasonable hour specifically to go and watch it. And it kind of let me down. So, but with that sense of intrigue behind us, let's talk about what else is going to happen this week, because it was kind of a slower news week considering what we're used to anyway, with cuts and suspensions and fat people smoking a lot of dope and getting cut from the team and things like that happening. Next week will not be a quiet week. They have their final preseason game on Thursday, which we'll talk about toward the end. And what's going to happen on Thursday by 4 p.m. is the roster is going to be back down to 75. Now, this, and to give the history of this, this is usually where you're going to lose the players who have barely played even in the preseason games, or maybe have played too much in the preseason games. You're also going to get a couple where it's like, oh, I guess this person wins the job or they can be on the roster. And we talked about Jordan Gay a little bit before. Maybe he's that guy, and that's settled. But occasionally in this round, you get some players who you're thinking, oh, wow, they're letting that person go early, so they have a little time extra time to catch on to another team. I don't know if there will be any of those this time. Sometimes there are and sometimes there aren't. As far as some of the cuts you see, Frank, do you think it's going to be – straightforward, and they're just going to, cut the Alameda Toamus and Marcus Lucases, who I could have told you were on the roster until I started reading this article about cuts. Or are they going to get rid of people like a Jordan Gay? Maybe people are thinking he's a depth guy, more than just a depth guy. Or even a James Wilder, whose name gets bandied about, is, a potential depth guy. So, your thoughts, Frank?
I think it's a good question, and I do think that there will be a surprise cut or two, or a guy that there usually is, right? There's usually one that where everybody has them pegged a little higher than somebody else on the roster. But until they get it down to 52, whatever this cut is, that's the thing to remind yourself is until the final cut, a lot of the guys that are going to make this cut are simply making this cut for the same reason that Austin Trainer was signed, because somebody has to play the fourth preseason game. And so, I think that I'd like to talk about Jordan Gay, because I'm not sure that he – I think that becomes a roster spot where it was pretty clear last week that they were sort of both being auditioned to see if anybody could do the whole thing. And, Dan Carpenter might have played himself back into that role of, we only need one kicker and I can do the kickoffs. And, that might be freeing up a roster spot for – Rob Gronkowski, which is the one that we have.
Yes, if we could free up a roster spot for Rob Gronkowski, that'd be great. I'd say all tight end sets all day, and we're talking about the problems with the number two receiver. Problems no more.
Right.
he might be playing all the time on defense as well, frankly.
Glenn Gronkowski, right? Like that, you know, it might be a room for him for a guy who can do like a special teams fullback sort of hybrid role. I will admit that this is one of my more shaky parts of the offseason, where I just, you know, I only focus on the people I have heard of and the few people that are sort of making note, and I assume everyone I haven't heard of will be cut. I have no real insight. Just if you could make up names, and I would probably agree that they would get cut this week.
Oh man, it's a shame we're discussing this now and not during the intro, because we could actually play that game where I give you each the names of three players likely to be cut, and you tell me which one is actually not a Bills player.
We could play F, Mary, cut, right?
Scott, any thoughts about whether we have any surprise cuts this go around, or whether it's going to be straightforward, like, sorry, Kane Coulter?
No, I mean, I think Rex already did his one, which is like the Carlos Williams release, which is like, oh, well, you know, it didn't work out here, but maybe he can go catch on somewhere else. And so with that in mind, I don't think that there's really – I think there's still enough concerns, especially with the injuries we had. Like, it'd be one thing if we didn't have a lot of injuries on the team, so we knew exactly – we had enough time that we were pretty set with the first team, and then we kind of had enough time to evaluate all the guys on the second team and really make good decisions about where those guys were. But we didn't. I don't think we've been in a position to do that since obviously the Ragland injury, since the Darius suspension, since Williams has gotten cut. So now we kind of actually need this time to. We can't be doing too many favors for guys we like on the team. So I think at this point it'll probably be your standard your Jameson Lulks of the world and your Robert Kuglers. So they're probably on the way out.
Well, William Forrester will be cut.
Jimmy Mundine.
Yep.
Jimmy Mundine. It's got an A. It's not Jimmy. It's Jimmy.
DeBrickashaw Showers will be cut.
What about Stryker? Is we gonna cut him?
I don't know. Yeah, that's the one on the Buffalo News article. That's the one that surprised me a little bit as well.
Like, he hasn't – that's the thing. He hasn't been seeing the field a lot in the preseason games, and I thought he was doing well in training camp, but I don't think I've seen his name called a lot. Maybe I just tuned out too many of the second halves, but kind of mentally, but I don't know.
Des Lewis is gone, right?
Yeah, and that's what
– this week or next, yeah.
Yeah, that's the one I kind of wanted to float around. Like, do we think they give him a chance to catch on somewhere else come this week just because he might have some attention around the league? He's a guy that – of others – honestly, at this point, I can't see them keeping any more than – five receivers, because these guys aren't that good depth-wise. No one's really stood out all that much, and you've got easily and potentially Liston be coming back. So I think they're only going to keep five wide receivers. I think they might get rid of one this week. Obviously, they're going to get rid of Kane Coulter. I wouldn't be shocked if Lewis is going to get the get ridden out this week, too. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Powell's pretty much a lock at this point, as is, I think, Goodwin. So barring, injuries between now and the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. So that's really, you're down to Greg Salas and those
Greg,
are those
Greg Little, Greg Salas, and Boykin, I think, and maybe.
And Boykin, maybe, but I don't recall him doing a tremendous amount either. So.
No, he's done some stuff, but he hasn't had a great preseason by any means. Yeah, I tend to, agree with you guys. I think we're going to lose 95% to 100% of what we're going to lose are, Max Vallis, Reed Ferguson, who had a chance to beat out Garrison Sanborn for the long snapper job, but is not going to, and honestly, it doesn't save the Bills that much money to get rid of Sanborn, so why would you do it for one of the best in the game? Robert Kugler, Jimmy Mundine. Can anyone tell me what position Jimmy Mundine plays?
Tight end. We already talked about
him. Oh, we did.
Jimmy. That's who I was talking about.
Oh, man. I missed that entirely.
But Jimmy.
So, yes. And then Sammy Seamster. People like that are going to go. I would think, I think Boom Heron, or James Wilder might get to go this week.
Oh, yeah. One of them's got to go this week.
Yeah. They have some depth at running back, so I wonder if they're going to give one of them a chance to sign on somewhere. I think Jordan Gay, as I mentioned earlier, could be that one. Maybe they make that decision early on, be like, all right, Dan, you're going to handle it all, and get him kind of ready in that mode where he's doing kickoffs or at least one full preseason game. Otherwise, I think I don't think Thursday is going to be that eventful day. I think when they do the final cuts, that's going to be much more of a big deal. So, yeah, I think that's probably that probably covers, I think, the roster cuts down, surprise cuts. All right. This is the time of year where we also do our pre-season previews. We're going to start with Scott and then work our way to Frank and then over to me. We each take a team in the division. We think our, you know, we tell you what our thoughts are on those teams, how they're going to affect the Bills this coming season, what the Bills are going to have to deal with this team. Starting with Scott and the Patriots, I will give the basic background here. The Patriots are coming off season where I assume they finish 15-1. They do every year. No, I think they went 12-4, which was costly to them because then they had to play on the road in the playoffs, and that ended up being the death of them. They lost their last two games of the regular season. And, you know, it was a tough finish for them. Now, the big news is they're losing Brady at the beginning of the season for four games. They've got some huge injury question marks. But they're still the Patriots. They're still the dominant team in the division. You know, Scott, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you know about the Patriots and what maybe as Bills fans we should be paying attention to.
So there's definitely the Pats are, again, like you want to say it's a little bit of the same old story, but it's the same old story of the last like 3 to 4 years, not the same old story of the last 15 years, which is, you know, they're not where they were. This is a beatable team. The depth isn't there. It's all coming down to Brady and Gronkowski. You know, the defense has still kind of got some talent there, but they can also be beaten. So who's going to do it? And then no one ever does. And it's entirely possible that this will be a continuation of that. You know, there's plenty of problems with this team. I mean, obviously Brady being out the first 4 weeks is one of them. That's definitely led to at least one, hopefully two, at least one of those being the Bills, more losses than they would have had otherwise. You know, running back, you know, LeGarrette Blount's fine for going up the middle, and Brandon Bolden's a little shiftier, but Deion Lewis, who's a guy who killed the Bills last year, is not going to be in uniform for at least the first, like, 10 weeks, roughly, if he's under the PUP list, whatever it is. Receivers, you know, again, no one really scares you here. Julian Edelman, Chris Hogan, Danny Amendola, like, Edelman's really good at what Julian Edelman does, but he ultimately, I mean, there's questions about where Aaron Dobson, who's a guy who was one of the real deep threats that they had, is even going to make the team. So I don't know how they're going to do that, but it's possible that'll, you know, what's stopping them at this point. It's clearly they know better than anyone what's going on. Obviously Gronkowski, and they do have they bring in Martellus Bennett, who I think is a good number two tight end. I mean, I think if he's your number one, like, you're okay. Like, it's not great, but he's certainly not he's not Gronkowski's level, but if he's your number two, that's pretty good. So I think that's going to be something that's going to pose a problem for the Bills, especially because we have, you know, obviously Zach Brown's pretty decent covering guys down the field, but Brandon Spikes definitely is not going to be one of those guys. And Preston Brown is okay, but I'm not sure I'm really excited about him calling Martellus Bennett. I think that's a win for the Pats there. You know, the Pats lost Sebastian Vollmer, so it's going to be Nate Solder and Marcus Cannon at tackle. That's obviously two guys who have started for them before, but also they're pretty thin after that. They've had a lot of injuries on their front line. They just cut Brian Stork. They traded Stork to the Redskins. They drafted a guy, Shaq Mason, but he's not going to be ready until October. The defense is actually going to be pretty decent, probably, and that's probably the thing that Bill Belichick will make the most hay out of. Obviously, you have Malcolm Brown, who's kind of taken over the Vince Wilfork role, and he's done it pretty decently. Ninkovic, obviously, has been a huge thorn in the Bills' side, but they also picked up Chris Long off the scrap heap, basically, for nothing. So that's someone who can kind of, you know, come in and do some decent work for them. Same with Barcavius Mingo, who was a very high draft pick a couple of years ago, and, of course, should be, you know, might be able to do that again with Belichick. So, you know, I think the corners is one of those things where you might have a little something to work on there. Butler, obviously, hero of the Super Bowl, and he's a good corner, but I don't think he's nearly as good as Revis or some of the other guys we've had over the years. And then Devin McCourty in the safety corps, along with Patrick Chung, Chung, you know, to me, I don't think he's that good, but they seem to do not as well without him last year. But when he was with the Chiefs, he didn't look like anything. So it might be one of the things where he's better with Belichick. So, you know, definitely a team that can be beaten. You look at where they are on the Bills' schedule. Obviously, the Week 4 game is kind of huge. I mean, the Bills win that game. I don't want to say they're going to be in the driver's seat for the division, but they certainly... they certainly get to hold serve. And given how well they played against the Jets and the Dolphins the last 2 years, you got to look at them maybe coming out of this season with, you know, again, 4-2 or 5-1 against the rest of the division. And that is going to be critical when it comes to kind of those last couple weeks of the season. So, you know, and even then, like, you know, again, could the Bills beat the Patriots at home even with Brady? Sure, I could see that happening. But it's difficult sometimes to really understand what the mental thing and what the difference is between the coaches and how big of a difference that is, regardless of the talent that's on the field. So I don't think I could say that. I don't want to say that nothing's changed since last year, but I think there's not enough has changed that we need to redo the kind of. The preview that we did for them last year, to a certain extent. Anyway, they also have some really hilariously offensive shirts, offensive to me as a Bills fan shirts, called New Patriots T-shirt, Destroy Them All Tour 2016, that they're selling on the Pat's Pulpit website. Mm-hmm. So your quarterback cheated, and now you're being punished. Get over it. The end.
Pat's Pulpit. Jerks.
That's all I have to say. Any questions on the Pats?
No, I think as a Bills fan, you know, I feel like the Pats preview is the same every year. this time it has a little twist with the Brady suspension, but honestly, I will believe in their downfall when I see it. And of course, that Week 4 game is huge, as Scott pointed out, and that's really going to be something to see. So. Onward to Mr. Scott, Mr. Frank. We just did Mr. Scott. So, we look at the Dolphins. Disappointing, season for them, last year. Record went downhill, dropped to the bottom of the division. Things were not looking up. Perhaps, Frank, you can shed some light on, you know, what the Dolphins are up to, what we might foresee with them in 2016, and whether Ryan Tannehill still has a hot wife.
I don't know about his hot wife. I would have to look that part. Maybe someone could
look that up. I'll take care of that.
You want to Google some hot wifeage. Okay. The Dolphins got owned. I mean, not just by the Bills, but kind of across the board last year. They had issues because they couldn't run the football, which really sort of highlighted Ryan Tannehill's shakiness as a starting quarterback. He sort of regressed previously from his previous stance of being like a good quarterback to like a back down to like a quarterback, but it was really sort of highlighted by the fact that they couldn't run the ball. They were dead last year. They were 30th anyway last year in running the football. And the thing with the Dolphins is it's hard to say that they've actually gotten better with any of their improvements. They're relying on Jay Ajayi or Jay in the running game, which might be fine, but they didn't really do much to improve their offensive line. We're talking about adding guys like Craig Urbick and Jermon Bushrod to the
Craig Urbick, Wisconsin.
Right, but like, by the time you're adding like the Buffalo Bills castaway swing tackle to your offensive line, what are you really doing? Like, are you that's almost the definition of rearranging deck chairs. And so, the idea is that, you know, offensively, they have a lot of young wide receivers that could be good and could, you know, like Jarvis Landry, he could be fine. But if they're going to have the same problem on offense as last year where they can't run the football, then they're not going to get to the place where, you know, Tannehill's going to be able to get back to his passing ways, and they're going to be in a lot of trouble. And it's sort of the same on the opposite side of the football. Their secondary improved. They have Rashad Jones, but like other than that, like Byron Maxwell struggles. Like, you know, there's other guys. They have a second round pick, Xavien Howard, or second year player Tony Lippett, to take a hefty amount of the snaps. That came from Pro Football Focus. I'm kind of looking at their their sort of encapsulation. And you know, so it's gotten a little bit better for them. But their front seven, which 3 years ago was an excellent unit, was pretty bad last year. They couldn't stop the run at all. And they added Mario Williams was their big add coming off what's certainly his worst season as a pro, whether a percentage of that was because he simply didn't want to play football anymore. I don't know. But like the point was he's coming off a terrible year and he's going to Miami. And so it's hard to say that, you know, other than Sue and Cameron, you know, Cameron Wake is 34. He had an Achilles tear. You know, Williams is 31. Sue is the only guy who's like an impact player, and there's a good chance that he hurts himself. Of course, Kiko Alonso, is
the legend.
The legend, I guess, who, you know, couldn't even hack it in Philadelphia for a year. I don't know.
You're not impressed.
I'm not impressed, and I noticed that on the Finnsider that they're you know, how will Miami do in the division? It starts with, you know, they're going 4-2, requires them to beat the Bills twice. That was their first bullet point for how to go 4-2. And that included the entire premise of beating the Bills twice was the Bills smell a little like a media circus right now. And that there will be lots of distractions. And the Ryan brothers and Marcel Darius is in rehab. And so they're just like, it smells like it's going to all fall apart. Which it could. It could. I'm not saying it could. But I'm saying if you're writing the write-up and that's like how you're going to beat the Bills twice, like I think you sort of know that you didn't improve as much as the rest of the AFC East. And while they might be 7-9 or 8-8 this year, no. There's a very good chance that Miami even takes another – like, that's the thing. If it doesn't work out for Miami, they could crater. They could really be a 4-5-6-win team again this year.
All right. You have one hope, which is that they play the Patriots week 2, so they also get a Brady-less Patriots game. The Jets, of course, don't have this benefit. So, but they do open up at Seattle, so they're starting 0-1 almost for sure. The only way I could – if Miami beats Seattle in the opener, well, then that changes everything I just said. But I think we're generally largely in agreement with Frank in his opinion on this one. Scott, you have any thoughts on the Dolphins or, more importantly, Ryan Tannehill's wife?
So it's unfortunate, of course, because this is how live podcasting works. And when I say live, I mean what we're doing now and not editing things. She's, of course, pregnant. So now we all feel gross for, you know, being like, yep, oh, she's so hot, but she's actually pregnant, and now she's a wonderful mother, and yada, yada, yada. I'm sure they're very happy. Though I did find when Googling Ryan Tannehill's wife, which is the second thing that comes up, by the way, obviously, after you Google Ryan Tannehill, Ryan Tannehill wife comes up. But actually, if you scroll down a bit, you go to Miko Grimes, who is the wife of Brent Grimes.
Oh, yeah. And
she apparently is not a fan of Ryan Tannehill.
No, she's the Bills hater, yeah.
Well, she's everyone hater, apparently, because things she said about Ryan Tannehill last December. I knew this QB stunk the minute we signed to this team, but I tried to keep quiet so I didn't discourage Bay, which is Brent, from believing in his team. So that's good that she tried until the end of the season. I should have known we were going to lose when I heard we didn't complete a single pass in two-minute drills this week against the practice squad defense. Ouch. She also wrote a Hill column. How many people does Ryan Tannehill have to get fired before you realize he's the problem?
Yep. Notice her post, her tweet from 1 minute ago. Literally 1 minute ago, Ryan Tannehill is a bum. That is literally 1 minute ago.
Good to know.
She tweeted that.
Yeah, and the one in this article that I'm reading is another one is, who got more people fired, Ryan Tannehill or Jonathan Martin? A reference, of course, to the guy who got incognito kicked out because of bullying. But this woman may be a little bit unstable, not because of those comments, which are all mostly correct, probably. She also suggested that they should have named Brent Grimes defensive MVP of the Pro Bowl, an award that went to J.J. Watt instead. If you're watching the Pro Bowl and caring that much about who won the defensive MVP, you need to probably reevaluate your life. But yes, she was arrested before the Dolphins played the Bills in Miami. And the charges of disorderly conduct and battery on a police officer were dropped. So, anyway, I agree with her football analysis.
Yeah, nothing wrong she's there. Pretty spot on.
Maybe the life choices, I don't know. But certainly, you know, Miko, if you're out there, you want to come on the pod and talk football, you're more than we'd love to have you.
Yeah, it would be our highest rated episode, and we would it would be lively. It would be a lively
podcast. Probably not suitable for kids. Anyway, that was fun.
Yep. And I, you know, one thing we're talking about Tannehill. I think that's really where it starts and ends with me for the Dolphins is they are on the hook for $11.64 million for him this year, $22 million in dead money, so they can't release him. And I think he is a subpar quarterback. I think you look at advanced statistics. I think you look at situations where the game doesn't matter. He will have moments now and then, but he's just not really anything remotely special. And then yet, this is who they've invested in, and he is that problem. I think the defense won't be too bad, to be honest in my mind. I think Mario Lynn's even coming off his worst season is still helpful. I think he has a fire under him, too, which will help. But offensively, there is nothing about this team offensively that makes me, you know, worry remotely about the Dolphins at all improving. So I tend to agree with Frank there. All right, so we have, for myself, left the one team that I think is really kind of the up in the air sort of one, aside from the Bills, who are always up in the air every year. We don't think the Dolphins will be very good. We think, regardless of the Brady thing, New England will still be good. The question is, how good? The Jets, you can really kind of go either way with this squad, starting on the offensive side of the football. There is a reason Pro Football Focus ranks them 32nd among teams in the analysis, because you've got a lot of quantity here without having a lot of quality. Ryan Fitzpatrick, I like the guy. I've always liked the guy. He is not someone who can be counted on to lead you to the next level. And the way the Jets offense is designed with superstar wide receiver types, That's what they're trying to depend on, and I simply don't think he's the guy to lead you there, but I don't think they have any depth behind none of the guys behind him, be it Christian Hackenberg, be it Geno Smith, be it the other dude, whose name I always forget.
Hackenberg or Petty?
Petty, yeah. Petty's the one I always forget. So, you know, these are guys I just don't foresee taking over the spot. I think that's really going to be an Achilles heel for them all season. And then you look at the, you know, thinking, well, maybe they have a strong running game. Maybe, but maybe not. I mean, you're depending a lot out of on Matt Forte here. You bring him in, you're thinking, okay, 2 years ago, he had 1,846 total yards rushing and receiving. At 102 catches, he was a dual threat. He started at least 15 games, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of his first 8 seasons. Last year, you know, down to 13 games, you know, you see his touches going down. You see a lot of other negative trends here, and he's hit that magic age of 30. Now, I'm not saying he's done, because sometimes people have great seasons after the age of 30, even at running back, and it gets overstated that once you hit 30 as a running back, you're done. The odds definitely say you're in the decline, but you still might have some good years ahead of you. So, but I think that's risking it really big. Wide receiver, this team is very, very strong. Marshall and Decker, you know, very good. They don't have a lot of depth. An injury to one of them is going to hurt that team. I think the offensive line is probably a crap show. You know, no more DeBrickashaw. They didn't really impress me in any of their games last year, and I saw 7 or 8 Jets games. I think that's going to be a big problem for them. Defensively, honestly, I think they're still fine. I think their secondary is aging, which does not just mean Darrell Revis. I think they definitely had some additions and they had some subtractions. You've still got Pryor. You've still got Gilchrist. You know, you're doing some good things there in the secondary, and I think that will still be a decent unit, but again, they're getting a little bit older, and that would be something that concerns me. But I still think defense is the strength of this team. Their front seven has been good for a decade, even when the team is terrible. I don't expect them to get much worse. But when I look on the offensive side of the ball, I just have way, way, way too many concerns about what this team can do. And what's perhaps my biggest concern with this team is let's look at these first six games. You host the Bengals, certainly a winnable game, but the Bengals are a team that seemed destined for greatness until Dalton got hurt. Then at Buffalo on Thursday night, then at the Chiefs, then the Seahawks, and then two more road games at the Steelers, and then at the Cardinals.
Nice.
So this is a potential – this is realistically a potential 0-6 start. They will
that
literally
is very realistic.
Yeah, I mean they will be right up against it if they don't win at least two of these games. They're going to be in some trouble because even when you look after that, the schedule certainly gets weaker the second half of the season when you start off with that brutality. But then you still have two games against the Patriots, one November 27th and one Christmas Eve. So you know it's not like it eases up all that much. So they have a brutal start to the season. They really need to navigate that. I don't think they will. I think the Jets are going to take a step back this year because of the quality of the opponents they face. I think they're going to win at least one of those first five games. I think they could even potentially win two. I don't see them winning more than that. And you start 2-4, you're going to – they finished 10-6 last year. You'll need to finish probably 8-2 to make the playoffs, maybe even 9-1 if last year's any indication. And there's enough potential downfalls in that second, those last 10 games that make me think that's not going to happen. So I think we see the Jets take a step back this year. I think it's, you know, I still think their defense is great. I think their offense is going to be problematic. Anyone have any thoughts on the New York football Jets?
They suck!
Done and done. Mic drop. No, Paul, that was excellent analysis.
Excellent,
that schedule thing, that just blew my mind. So that kind of makes this week two Jets game kind of a big game because you can kind of put the nail in them early and give them that, you know, no team ever starting 0-3 or whatever has ever made the playoffs. Like, that would seriously, like, make me feel a lot better about how this season goes. Because, we can all, like, laugh at them all we want because we beat them in the last game last season and kept them from the playoffs. But they were closer to the damn playoffs than we were last year. That's for damn sure. So I would be happy if they kind of fell on their faces and then kind of see how Todd Bowles does with a team full of divas in the New York media trying to have them kind of stay together after a 1-5 start or an 0-6 start. Like that could go sideways very quick for them. So, that will be very interesting. That's good stuff.
Yep. I see. That's fun. The schedule is always something you've got, and I looked at the schedules more so this year simply because of the Brady suspension. I wanted to see how that hurts, and that's hurting the Jets the most too, because even though the one really good team they seem to escape in those first 6 weeks is the Patriots, but that's a bad thing. Mm-hmm. That's when you want to face the Patriots this season.
Exactly.
Those first four games. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. I think the Bills are lined up in position to potentially be second this year, but we'll discuss that next week. So, I have a lame-ish this day in Bills history I'll get to before we move on to some of the general stuff. All I could really find is that 48 years ago today, in 1968, the Bills traded a ninth-round draft pick, a huge commodity, as you'll know, by the fact they no longer even have nine rounds in the NFL draft, for fullback Bob Cappadonna, Robert Joseph Bob Cappadonna, member of the Northeastern University Athletics Hall of Fame. Mr. Cappadonna would go on to have his best NFL season in 1968 with the Bills. Combined, he had more carries and more yards than he had in his first two seasons with the then Boston Patriots combined. And those stats are 73 carries for 272 yards at a 3.7-yard average, and he never played in the NFL again. So that was his star and final season was 1968. It was 48 years ago today he was traded. In case you're wondering what he does now, check out the Cappadonna Insurance Agency located in Watertown, Massachusetts. He's been operating that insurance agency for the last 44 years. So if you live in Watertown, Massachusetts, and you like subpar NFL fullbacks to be handling all of your important insurance matters, I would highly recommend Bob Cappadonna, traded to the Buffalo Bills for ninth-round pick on this day in 1968. So, next week will be September, and I'm actually going to have a real this day in Bills history. So, I will have to be ready for that. So, do we want to go to the Kaepernick stuff now, or do we want to give a quick Lions preview?
Welcome to your annual trip to Detroit, where Yeah. Nothing happens and we don't care.
So we don't care. I like that.
Spot number 53 on the roster could be decided in this game. So
the Bills are going to win 5-0. That's my score prediction.
And I'll say the Lions win a tight one 7-6. Oh, that's a nice play by this linebacker in this Houston Cardinals game. Anyway, yeah, no, this is going to be a terrible game that no one should watch. But
if you watch this game and you to the end, you will feel bad about yourself, and you should.
At least if you do it at regular speed with commercials. Like, if you want to watch, please do it on delay with, you know, some fast forwarding.
Yes, I will. I guarantee you, and I apologize to the fans on this. I will not be live tweeting. This Thursday's game. I will be doing things like having a wife. So what I'm going to do, and I'm more scientific than you guys, I'm going to take the number of points the Bills scored in last year's Lions preseason game versus the number of points the Lions score in the 2014 preseason game. So that's brilliance on my part. The Bills scored 10 points in last year's loss at Ford Field, and we're going to go back to the 2014 season now. And how many did the Lions score? Of course, I should have done this before the podcast started. They scored 0 against the Bills at Ralph Wilson Stadium. So
huge.
Buffalo 10, Detroit 0 in this game.
Woo!
All right. I guess we talk about caps now. You know what we didn't do this year, and we can kind of do this a little bit next week, is the quarter of the season preview where we go through each of the
Yeah, we'll have to do the full season preview kind of next week.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, at least a like record guess, if not the full
season.
Yeah,
if not all quarters, yeah. Sure.
Right.
And then so that when we talk about the Lions game now, that's the last we're gonna talk about the Lions game unless an actual Lion runs on the field and eats Tyrod Taylor. I cannot imagine there'd be anything about the Lions game we discuss. So we'll have cuts to discuss, the final roster. We'll have we'll be 1 week from the season, so all that stuff's going to go down.
Baltimore preview.
All right. Yep. So onward we go to the Colin Kaepernick saga. So for those of you who don't know, there was a national anthem that gets sung before every game, even useless, meaningless preseason games. And in this case, Colin Kaepernick made the somewhat controversial decision, and by somewhat controversial, I mean people are destroying him for sitting down while this was happening. NFL players have reacted. Some again saying this is ridiculous. Justin Pugh didn't like it. T.J. Yates didn't like it. Matt Hasselbeck said easy way to make sure you're not the starting QB on opening day. Others expressed a little bit more indifference toward this. So I don't want to go into too much of my opinion on this first. I forgot who started the last segment. I think I started with Scott, so we'll start with Frank on this one. Thoughts on the Kaepernick situation?
Yeah, so I didn't really see any of this in real time and did not honestly pay much attention to it until we decided we were going to talk about it today. And I actually have learned quite a bit about the national anthem. I learned that there is more than one verse to it, that some of the verses are pretty shitty to like there's the third verse, read about the third verse of the Star Spangled Banner. But I think the national anthem is technically only the first verse. So at least we've done that. Anyway, I think that there's I think this falls into a very classic, part of American culture, okay? Freedom of speech means a lot of things. It means you don't have to stand for the national anthem, a freedom of expression. And the other part of that is everybody gets to say exactly what they think of you if you don't stand up for the national anthem. Personally, I am sympathetic with Kaepernick's position and his beliefs with regards to some of what is happening culturally in this country. I don't know that I would have chosen to express myself the way he did. I think perhaps it's a bit of a poor way to make this expression, but it's not really for me to say what Colin Kaepernick should or shouldn't do. And so I largely don't want to just because I wouldn't do it and just because I think it's foolish doesn't actually mean that I should tell him what he has done is foolish. I think it will end up costing him. I think that if you're in the NFL, there are people who will take that very, very personally. And that's, you know, if there's one thing we know about the NFL is rightly or wrongly, when you're a quarterback, people need to trust and like you. And if he has alienated a lot of his teammates, that could really cost him in his career. And that's unfortunate, but part of what his expression is going to cost him. If that's, you know, there are consequences to expression, even if it is, you know, free in the sense that you won't be put in jail or fined. So I wish him the best of luck, but I don't know. That was kind of a gutsy, but also, I felt like, I don't know, gutsy but stupid way to deal with it. So.
Okay. I agree in principle a lot of you say. I mean, it's, I think it is his right to do that. I think it is his right to have that opinion, certainly. I also do not think that that is the best way to go about changing people's minds, usually.
Yeah.
It's also probably not going to help your endorsements, which, good for him if he doesn't care about his endorsements, but seeing as how he's the backup in San Francisco, he probably should. The other thing is, I would also be fine if the NFL wanted to suspend him. And who cares? Because, I mean, they didn't. They have pretty much come out and said that we encourage players to stand during the anthem, but it is certainly not required, which is also totally their right. I wouldn't be surprised if the NFL had taken a harder line here under the whole, like, as long as we're policing everyone's morality without trial, why don't we just go ahead and do this too?
Right, and
the exact same rationale, basically.
You can lose $10,000 for not wearing your towel correctly.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it wouldn't have surprised me either, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, if anything, it's a little interesting that they didn't. Yeah. But in any event, I think the biggest, you know, we can leave the cultural kind of points aside because that's a topic for a better podcast with better speakers in it. Mm-hmm. But certainly I don't have a problem with the way the NFL handled it. And probably the best thing is to just kind of let it go and not really get into it and just kind of move along. Let's just pretend this isn't happening and he'll do it on opening day again. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. And then that'll be it. Like, hopefully this story just kind of goes away. Because if they try and ban him, then there's going to be a bunch of other people starting to do it, and then it becomes a much bigger issue, and then that's definitely how the NFL starts losing business, which is all they care about. So.
Yeah, I think Kaepernick is just dumb. I think he's trying to make a statement, and I don't think he's doing it the right way, which is essentially what Frank alluded to. I've got no issue. I have no issue with what he's trying to do. I just don't think, again, that this is how you bring attention to the issue. I think this is how you bring attention to yourself because you don't quite understand exactly the significance of what you're doing to other people. I don't hold that against him because, again, I think he just doesn't know better. This is a guy who's busy posing in GQ and just being kind of a numbskull generating his day-to-day life. So, he's an ignorant guy. He's a backup quarterback. And, you know, if he does it in week one, fine. If he doesn't, I really, you know, there are a lot of people who I care what their attitude is towards the issues that he was trying to bring attention to because I think they're educated. I think they have a lot to say, even though there are people who aren't educated who have a lot to say that's relevant on this issue. I don't think he's that guy, and I don't really care what he thinks on it. So I'm not going to take anything he does. And honestly, it's not going to draw any more attention to it than something someone of relevance is doing. So, he's essentially, when I look at him, like, this is a guy who's, it almost reeks of someone trying to make himself more relevant than he is draw attention to the issue he says he's trying to draw attention to.
Yeah, what he wanted to do, I think he's definitely made the story about himself.
Yeah.
Willingly or otherwise, I, so.
Right, so. I think if you're going to do that, you show what you're doing to on your side to help overcome that oppression, to really help make a statement. You know, that's not making a statement. That's just what are you doing, in your community to try to overcome these sorts of issues? And he's not. He's just sitting down during an anthem. I think that's, I don't know. But I think he thinks he's probably doing some good. Who knows? Who knows what he thinks? Because he's Colin Kaepernick. Let's see. Do we cover all the major issues of relevance and do it in 1 hour? I think we've actually done that.
Woo!
All right. Do we want to figure out a way to drag this out just to make it an hour and 30? Like we
no.
All right. Fine. I will be the guy. You know what? I will take credit, love it or hate it. I kept it on schedule today, so kudos to me.
Oh, zing.
This is the key I found. Have, like, 3 items on your agenda, and then stretch them out.
And also no listener questions, because no one put it on Facebook, mostly me. So makes it a lot easier to get through this podcast if these idiot listeners aren't trying to chime in with their ridiculous insane questions.
Their jerk status.
If you want to send us more ridiculous and insane questions...
This is a good week. You know what, though? This is a good week for it, though, because we're going to talk about cuts. We're going to talk about the season preview. It's going to be go time, and, you know, we should make sure. Chime in with your predictions. Like, let's hear them. Let's get it all together. And this is a good week for audience participation, probably.
It is, exactly. So thanks on Friday to Ryan especially, who was very communicative during the game. Orlando chimed in at the end of the game. David and I were talking during the game. Brandon had a few things to say. Appreciate all of your feedback. I'm sure we'll talk once some cuts are made, once there is some news. Until then, you can talk to me whenever you want on Twitter. TweetDeck, that's a bad sign. Twitter.com/BBillsMNY. Scott and also occasionally Frank pops in on Facebook, Facebook.com/BBillsMNY. You can Google Buffalo Bills Podcast, and we are right there on page one. You can find us on iTunes. You can pretty much find us anywhere you can possibly imagine. So thank you all for listening today. Next week is going to be a big one. We'll have the season preview. We'll talk about who's on the final roster. We'll talk about what to expect in the first quarter of the season. And then 2 weeks from now will be the real big one. We'll probably be more sober than we were last year, probably, for the opener. So
we'll see.
Possibly.
Yeah. Until that time, thanks for listening, everyone. I am Paul.
I'm Scott.
I'm Frank.
Good. See you. Yeah, we're just going to end there. See you guys.